Well, for the first part of the service, we'll have our local deacon, Jody Smith.
Good afternoon, brethren. It's good to see everybody this week. As most of you know, Cindy and I and the majority of my family, all the grandkids and Corey and Ashley have just got back from a trip to Yellowstone Park. And so today, I thought that I would kind of run through some experiences with what we went through in Yellowstone, update you with the COVID, because we traveled through six states. And when we took off, I didn't really know what to expect. So I thought I would discuss a little bit of that. And I'd like to tie it in with the title of my message today, Patience, Perseverance, and Passion. Patience, Perseverance, and Passion. So about 3 weeks ago, brethren, I heard that I was going to get furloughed. And so what do I do when I'm out of work and no pay? I go on a vacation. Seems a little counterintuitive, but that's how I roll. No, it was a perfect opportunity. I've been working out of my home now mostly for the year. Other than coming to services, you know, I'm bouncing off the walls. And I thought to myself, hey, let's just go to Yellowstone. Nobody's traveling. We'll be up there in the wide open spaces and we'll be by ourselves. And Mr. LeBlanc, when I told him we were heading out, he said, well, you might have to wear a mask. And I said, when I'm knee deep fishing in a river, I'm not wearing a mask. So we quickly threw it together. We asked the entire family to go, and only my oldest daughter, Danielle, she had to work, so she wasn't able to go. But we had five grandkids, and then Corey and Ashley, and then Cindy took off, 5 a.m. And we should have known something was up, because I like to camp at Yellowstone, and there was nothing available. It's been booked for the summer. That didn't really derail me, because you have to do this almost a year in advance. So I thought, well, probably did it a year in advance. Nobody's still going to be there. So we left Oklahoma, we drove up to Salina, Kansas, then I think it's I-70, we went west, could be wrong on that, but anyway, I think it's 70, and immediately I recognized a lot of traffic. Every time we pulled into a gas station, you had to get in line. Very rare that we drove up to a pump that you could drive up. Of course, every time we went to the restroom, you're also standing in lines. Now, when we were in Kansas, they had made it mandatory that we wear a mask. So one of the things that I want to mention is that in Romans, Paul does tell us that we should obey the laws of the land and the authorities, as long as it doesn't get in the way of our religious beliefs, which wearing a mask does not. So we wore a mask when we were supposed to. We get out, I pump gas, I put a mask on. When we go into the bathrooms, we put a mask on. And for the most part, Kansas was really diligent. I mean, I would say the majority of everybody I saw there, even the person walking out in the backfield where there was nobody else there, was wearing a mask. And that was the law. We got into Colorado and it was hit or miss, which is going to come back as part of my discussion today. Of course, we blew through there, and everything I'm seeing is at the bathrooms, at the gas pump, or wherever we stop to eat lunch or something. And we got up into Wyoming. We stayed in Cheyenne the first night. It was hard to find hotels, by the way. A lot of them were booked up. The ones that we wanted to stay at were all booked up. The lady behind the counter didn't wear one. The people working there didn't wear them. And then we went to Jackson Hole from Cheyenne. The next day, we drove to Jackson Hole, which is probably my favorite place in the United States. I've tried to get us to move there more than once. That was before Hollywood showed up. And I wanted to spend a whole day in Jackson Hole. And I wanted to go up into the Grand Teton. After I saw the crowds, no way. It was like Branson, Missouri. It was like Gatlinburg last year when we were at the feast. Bumper to bumper, just to get at McDonald's at lunch at 2:30 in the afternoon, took us 30, 40 minutes. I mean, it was unbelievable. Ashley and Corey were behind us. They said it took them an hour and a half or something like that to get out of the town. It was absolutely crowded, okay? Now, that's something I wanted to bring up, because we're going to be traveling to St. George for the feast, and there's some things you need to be aware of. One, everything is slower. Everything. You try to get gas, you're in line. Go to the bathroom as you're traveling, you're in line. But what gets me is lunch. We have places in Kansas that we normally stop for lunch because we've traveled through that state so many times. One of the things that I saw was this particular town. Can't remember the name of it, but it's a little bit after Russell, Kansas, in between Russell and Hayes. Most of that town had lost their business. A lot of businesses were done. They were boarded up, closed up, that had been there for years. A lot of oil-filled places. McDonald's was shut down. Burger King was not shut down. But again, at 2 p.m, when lunches should be over, there's 20 cars. So we decided to go over and get a Subway. There was a smaller line over there. And then I think we had to end up going to a gas station just to go to the restroom because the restaurants would not let you go in and go to the restroom. They were closed down. You could do drive-through only. And that is what we witnessed most of the states we drove through. It was drive-through only. All right. So here's what I'm seeing. And I'm seeing this in Broken Arrow when I do come into the office to work, is that your normal lunch crowd is still going and picking up at the window. But then there's all the other people who are not going out to the grocery stores showing up and eating lunch at the window. So that's why the lines just seem to be so long these days, even locally. So anyway, we got up to Rexburg, Idaho. And as we were looking for a place to stay outside the park, we just couldn't find anything. It was either way overpriced or it was booked. So we ended up staying an hour and 20 minutes away in Rexburg, Idaho, which was a beautiful little town. It was mostly Mormon. I was telling Mr. LeBlanc and Barbara that all these families were walking around, families everywhere, just out in the yard. It was a very family-oriented town. Corey and Ashley actually looked to see if they could get a teaching job there and found out that Oklahoma is not the lowest paid place for teachers. So kind of blew their idea of moving up to Rexburg, Idaho. But nobody's wearing a mask. So in Idaho, when we left, Idaho was not a red state. When we got there, it was a red state. They were going through the panic mode. Cindy and Ashley went out to get groceries, and they had wiped out the Walmarts and the stores as we were there. Again, I think by the time that we finished, you could not get eggs. You could not get certain items. They were already removed. And they came back and said, this is like Oklahoma back in March and April, when everybody was just wiping everything out of the stores. So they were going through their, what they call wave one COVID panic. We were kind of seeing that a little bit in Montana. We ended up driving through Montana for about 5 hours on one of my mistakes. When we got into the park one evening, it took us an hour, hour and a half to get out through the west. So we were up north and I said, hey, why don't we just go up north through Montana and around? Well, after 5 hours of driving in Montana and after a 12-hour day driving that day, we decided that was not a good decision. But I've always wanted to drive through Montana. Loved it. I want to move there. Montana, Idaho, and that portion of Jackson Hole is my area now that I'd like to move to, if I could. It's a beautiful area of the country. Yellowstone. I'll give you a little thing about Yellowstone. I was wrong. In fact, I had planned everything out to Friday, and my plans were destroyed the moment that we hit the park. Most of everything was shut down. Okay, they had one shop open that I recognized. Most of the little places were shut down. The water holes where you could swim were shut down. And by the way, for all our friends out in California, when I got to West Yellowstone and was entering the park, they had this huge sign. And their social distance policy was more strict at the park than in California or New York City, if you can believe that. It was more strict. And it kind of went like this. Social distancing, 100 feet. For bears and moose, 25 feet for bison and elk, 6 feet, 2 inches for everybody else. And they were very avid about the 6 foot, 2 inches because they had it marked at Old Faithful, 6 foot, 2 inches, 6 foot, 2 inches. So we got to Old Faithful and we got there a little bit early and were shocked by the crowds. I couldn't tell you how many hundreds of people ended up being there. I know at one point Corey got a little upset because they were crowding us without masks. I would say about 50% at Yellowstone wore masks. We did. Again, you know, as I said, Romans says for us to obey the laws of the land. That was the rules. And, you know, we're supposed to be wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove. Anyway, here's what was interesting. A lot of foreigners, a lot of people from other countries. I talked to a German family, a Japanese family, and an Italian family. And we talked about COVID in their country. Oh, yeah, it's bad, it's bad, it's bad. What do you think about coming over to America while we're going through it? Oh, yes, no big deal. That's how they saw it. And guess what? They didn't wear masks. Here was people from Oklahoma wearing a mask. There was people from Texas wearing a mask. Most of the people from other countries, which you could tell by their language, They didn't wear masks. So I thought that was fascinating because we get this idea that the Americans that don't cover up. So again, the park was absolutely the busiest I've ever seen it. When we wanted to go swimming in this particular place, we decided not to because the line was a mile long just to find the parking. So everything, all my plans were derailed from day one. And I'll get back to a little bit of this, but it really tested my patience. It really tested my patience. And so one of the things that I'm saying is when we go to St. George, understand your patience will be tested. So start thinking along these terms. If you're traveling by car anywhere to the feast, you're going to be in lines. Everything is slower. And you know me in lines. I was tested from the moment we left. Okay. Now, when I talk about patience, and again, the title is Patience, Perseverance, and Passion. There's one person in the Bible that absolutely you got to put a circle around, and that's King David. He shows every one of those attributes that I'm talking about today. Please turn to 1 Samuel chapter 16, and you'll see what I'm talking about. 1 Samuel 16, verses 11 through 13. Now, King Saul, God has decided he's going to replace him with another king. Samuel goes to the sons of Jesse. He's already looked through them, and we'll start in verse 11. And Samuel said to Jesse, "Are all the young men here?" Then he said, "There remains yet the youngest, and there he is keeping the sheep." Samuel said to Jesse, "Send and bring him, for we will not sit down until he comes here." So he sent and he brought him with bright eyes and good looking. And the Lord said, "Arise, anoint him, for this is the one." Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from the day forward. So from that moment, King David had the Holy Spirit, and he was anointed king of all Israel right here. Now, according to Josephus, he was around the age of 10. Most theologians think that he was maybe more around 15. So somewhere between 10 and 15, if you were to look at this, that he was anointed king of Israel. Now, we're not going to turn there yet, but we know in 2 Samuel chapter 5 that he became king at the age of 30, and he ruled for 40 years. Now, I'm going to say this. Say you're a kid around 10 or 15, and you say, "I'm going to give you a bright, new, shiny car, hot rod." And every year comes and goes, and you don't get the hot rod. And all of a sudden, at the age of 30, you get the car. You see where I'm going with this, is that King David, for at least 15 years, had to wait until he became the king, even though he was anointed much before that. Now, in today's society, I don't see anybody waiting for that. I mean, we're a very disposable, very got to get it now kind of, what is it, the now generation, right? The now generation. But King David showed extreme patience. Now, think about this. He sat and ate dinner with Saul. He played the harp for Saul. He actually had Saul's life in his hands more than once and refused to take that away from Saul. Shows to me an extreme level of patience. Patience that is pretty rare. Now, I'm going to come back to this because we're going to talk about a little bit about perseverance, but I want to give an example of my daughter. When we went, we had plenty of time to visit and catch up. You know, we've been very busy with the COVID thing. We haven't seen them as often as I have the other three grandkids. But I was talking with Ashley, and we're talking about a new book that she's about ready to publish. And she's getting 15 of these authors' books. And we're talking about the book. And it dawned on me that my daughter showed extreme patience, perseverance, and passion. Because she wrote the first book in high school. Took her about 10 years to publish it. She did have a couple of the big publishers that were willing to publish it if she would change the content. They wanted to put basically bad words and sex for 12-year-olds to 18-year-olds in the book. And I was very appreciative. She showed her character by denying the publisher the right to do that. And so she never got it published by one of the big three publishers. She then found a publisher that would do it. And in the end, they just robbed her. And about that time, I thought she was going to give up. I mean, I really thought that she was going to give up. Everything just looked bad. And she decided to go ahead and continue on. And not only did she show the patience in that 10 years, but she also showed great perseverance. So anyway, now she's about ready to publish her second book. And I sat down with her the other day and I said, you know what? The first time I was proud. How many of you have ever wanted to write a book? I did. I actually sat down one time and I outlined a trilogy of three books. Wrote the introduction, wrote the first chapter, and that's where it stopped. To actually sit down and write a book and finish it, not even publish it, is an accomplishment. But then to publish it and make a little bit of money shows some, you know, ingenuity and some passion. But I thought, well, you know, this is probably a fancy. She'll probably never do it again. Well, now she's published a couple of short stories, but this is her second big novel. It's big. I mean, it's a big book. I was pretty shocked. Much bigger than the first one she wrote. And I said, okay, Ashley, I said, you're definitely an author. I mean, the first time was a fancy, you know, one-hit wonder, but now you really love doing this. You have a passion for it. She agreed. She has a passion for the English language. Of course, she's an English major, and she loves to write. You know, it was one of the things that we talked about was her book and how excited she is and how she's already writing her next book. So just think about it. How many times you've actually sat down and started doing something and didn't finish it? I mean, that is a major accomplishment. Let's look over at James. It shows to me a lot of patience and a lot of perseverance. And of course, as I said, some passion there that she loves to do what she does. In James chapter 1 and verse 2, James says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. And brethren, I'm telling you, this COVID thing has been a trial. This is the longest that I have had in 23 years that I've been out of work. Okay. Now, I'm not saying I've been out of work the whole COVID time, but I've missed 5 or 6 weeks. It's been a trial. I've enjoyed every minute of it. But I'm just saying, and I can tell you this, I'm doubtful that my company is going to survive. 80-year-old company, we're the niche, we're the number one in that field, and we are touch and go. Our number one customer in Rock City closed their doors. Our number one customer in the gas industry, not the oil industry. So this is a trial, and we need to realize that it's a trial, and we need to get closer to God. But we need to have patience. We know that God is working out something with us. But he says here, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. Produces patience. And God wants us to be patient. It says, but let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So just keep that in mind. Again, as I've stated, we're going to St. George. Most of us are probably going to drive. Just realize that everything is slower. Keep your wits about you. Oh, by the way, got to say this. If you really want a conspiracy, if you really want to buy into a conspiracy, I'm convinced that the fast food industry does not expect to give you your order correctly. You know why? None of the fast food restaurants that we stopped and picked up a meal did it correct. They always omitted something. They knew we weren't going to go back and get in line because that line was too long. Okay. Now you sit there and go, well, why didn't you check out your food? Well, we did. And finally, at the end of it, I'm going, Cindy, you better look. And McDonald's, hey, you shorted us a fry. No, we didn't. Yeah, you shorted us a fry. And they go, you bought four. And I'm like, yeah, we got five people in the car. And they go, you got four. And I went, yeah, but my meal here was supposed to have one come with it. They wouldn't budge. And finally, I just said, you know, I'm not going to argue about a small bag of fry. I'll just give mine to one of the kids. But every one of them shorted us something. Everyone. And we stopped, I don't know, 2 days of driving there, 2 days of driving back, probably about 8 times, you know. And it started to become a joke at the end. I said, man, this is a conspiracy. This is the real conspiracy right here. So anyway, again, tested my patience, got through it. Trust me, my patience, as we go on, you'll see even more where I work through my patience issues. So when we talk about perseverance, I want you again to look at King David. And I mentioned he was ordained a king early on, waited at least 15 years before he actually became king, showing great patience. But we know that he had to persevere through that time. Many times his life was in jeopardy. His trials were many. But I want to point out something else about his ordination that is interesting to me. 2 Samuel. We'll look at 2 Samuel 5. And we'll look at verse 3. Here we go. So all the elders of Israel came to the king at Hebron, and King David made a covenant with them, anointed David king over Israel. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. So I brought that up. But now notice the next couple of scriptures. Now remember, he was promised all of Israel. Verse 5, in Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months. And in Jerusalem, he reigned 33 years over all Israel and Judah. So even after he became king, right? Even after he became king, it was like the other tribes of Israel said, you know, yeah, we're going to ordain you king, but you know what? We're going to wait and see. We're going to wait a couple of years here, 7.5 years, just see how you do over with the Jews, you know? And so even then, he had to wait before that promise was completely fulfilled. And I just look at that. I look at David as a guy who had extreme patience and perseverance. I mean, he's just the epitome of that in the Bible. However, when I think of perseverance, I do not really think of David. I don't think of myself. I don't think of you. I don't think of my daughter, Ashley. I think of my wife, Cindy. When we were married and after she was baptized, I had a talk with my dad, and she is going to murder me for this. And my dad said, he doesn't worry about her salvation. He knows she will not quit. And then he goes, she's like a bulldog. She's stubborn like a bulldog. So my ideal way of seeing Yellowstone is hiking up to about an 8,000-foot level lake. It's called Lake Grebe. It's the southernmost portion to fish for what's called an Arctic grayling. Now, I've done it in the past. It is the one thing that you'd almost say that I live for. I mean, I have been planning this trip for 20 years, and I'm going to spend all day at Lake Grebe. One day. We're going to be there for 4. One day. I'm going to hike in. I'm going to fish all day. I'm going to eat lunch. My dream is to hike in and camp. And you can do that, but you got to reserve it. As I said, nothing went to plan. I told Corey, I want you to go with me. Well, it didn't happen. You know, kids like to swim. They don't like to hike, you know, all that. So Friday was out. We already had Friday plans. So Thursday was my opportunity. And I'm begging Cindy to let me go up at noon. See, before I've always done it myself. But now I got 3 grandkids that want to go with me. Now I can still hike with a 50-pound pack, probably 15-minute mile. I could still do it. So I'm sitting there going, okay, so if we get up there at noon, you know, 45 minutes, we'll just say an hour, I'll be fishing by 1, right? I'll stay until about 7, hour out, 8 o'clock, I'll beat the dark. Now, I got caught in there dark one year, and it's scary, okay? So anyway, but then Cindy goes, I want to go. And I'm like, no. You see, she has her right knee bone on bone, and she hobbles around. Her left knee is almost bone on bone. She blew her last knee out at Yosemite Park going up and seeing those big trees. She almost didn't make it down, but she did. I wanted to say no. I mean, it's bad enough. I'm hauling 3 kids. I wanted to say no, but I also like, this is what I fell in love with her, is that she's adventurous. Believe it or not, she's very adventurous. So I agreed, but then we got stopped. We let the kids swim and we ate lunch with all the family. And I'm looking at the clock. My patience is wearing. I'm like, man, it's almost 3 o'clock. We got to get rolling. You know, I don't want to be in there at dark. It's a 3-mile hike in, 3-mile hike out. Well, Cindy asked me to look for her a stick. She thought she could make it if she had a stick. Well, I looked for a stick. I didn't see a stick. And there are a lot of trees down, but no stick. You want to know God provides miracles? So Corey was about a 1/2 mile upriver fishing. And we had already ate lunch. He's late. I'm watching the clock going, we got to go. And he comes walking back and he has a hiker's pole in his hand. And he goes, Cindy, would you like to use this? I said, where'd you get that? He goes, well, I was fishing and he was laying in the creek or wherever he was fishing. So God does provide, because she wouldn't have made it without that pole. Would not have made it. So finally, somewhere around 3, I race up there. It's about a 40-minute drive. You're going, in some places, 10 miles an hour to get there. We get there 3:30. I can't really remember. But we didn't get to the lake until 10 till 6. And I think we had to stop four times to allow Cindy to sit down and rest because she was already hurting. Now, I was carrying water, food, about a 40-pound pack. I'm carrying all the kids' fishing poles. I've got them in a bag. And then I've got a chair for Cindy that I'm carrying. And I would alternate them out with the kids. They helped me. But four times she had to sit down. It took us 2 hours and 10 minutes to make a 45-minute walk. I'm now looking at 10 till 6. Oh, let me back up a second. These hikers are coming out. And we said, hey, how far is this thing? Because I'm looking at dark time here. And I'm going, for real, this is serious. This is bear country. I even bought bear repellent. I'm carrying a pistol. Okay. And that's funny because you can open carry in Yellowstone. You just can't shoot the gun. That's kind of weird, isn't it? Can't shoot an animal, but hey. Anyway, and I'm at the point now, and Cindy's hurting really bad. She's tearing up. And I'm like, you know, maybe we should just turn around and go back. And she's like, no, we're going to make it. And I'm like, yeah, we might make it, but how are we going to get out of here? So anyway, these people are coming out of the trail. And we say, hey, how much further is it? And they go, you're right here, 100 yards. And about that time, one of the kids yelled, water. And Cindy saw the water. She just started crying. Just crying. And we put the chair down. She sits down and she said, I told you I'd make it. And that's the way she saw it. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, but we got 3 miles to go that way. Right? And it's taken us 2 hours and 10 minutes. So kids jump in the water. The two littlest ones jump in. They're having a great time. I get the fishing poles for me and Trenton. I'm sitting there thinking, man, we can fish from 6 to 6:30. At least I get a little bit of fishing in. The fish were just jumping all over this lake. I mean, they were hitting topwater flies and stuff. And anyway, about 10 minutes after 6, after I'd thrown it a couple of times and Trenton was out there, we were waist deep. And it's beautiful. Cindy's got the pictures. You need to look at the pictures. This lake is 8,020 feet. And you are literally in God's country. And that's the beauty about Yellowstone. You see the creation of God above the earth and below the earth. Because that stuff, you know, when you get to the geysers and all that, that's coming from underneath. It's just absolutely pristine. I think of Yellowstone when I think of the kingdom of God, believe it or not. And I know, as beautiful as that creation is at Yellowstone, that the kingdom is going to be so much better. When you go to the park, the animals are tame. Relatively. And that social distancing didn't work. It didn't work with humans, didn't work with the elk, didn't work with the bison. Apparently, people from Asia love to go touch them. And one bison was getting pretty hot. But that's what happens. That's what you see in this park. These animals that are not pressured, especially the herbivores. I would not want to go touch a grizzly. You know, in the kingdom, the grizzlies will be tame, right? But you get that sense of tame animals, even though they're not. So this beautiful lake, and again, it's about 8,020 feet, and I'm wanting to fish, and I'm glad. I am so glad I did not catch a fish, because if I'd have caught a fish, we'd have stayed till 6:30, and then we'd have been in trouble. But about 10 after, I said, pack it all up. We're not getting out of here, and I'm glad we did it, because Cindy could only travel 100 yards. 100 yards, totally in tears. At one point, about halfway, I said, hey, you keep the kids. I'll give you the bear repellent, the gun. I will run to the car and go get somebody. And she looked at me and goes, no, I will make it. She's beat red. She's gasping for air. She's crying. Okay, so Cindy's got the pole in her right hand. And Trenton is kind of supporting her on the left. I am now the baggage train of everything else. And I'm having a hard time with the two kids in front. Well, they're both asthmatic and one was tunnel vision. So we had to stop him. We had to give him water. We ran out of water and feed him. And he perked up, and you couldn't keep the two little ones. They would stray off, and I'd have to go chase them down. And anyway, about the time I heard cars, the traffic, we knew we were probably within a half mile of the parking lot. I thought she did her last gasp. Couldn't get out of the chair, really hurting. Mosquitoes were, I mean, unbelievable. We ran out of the first repellent. So we're out of water. We're out of repellent. And so finally, I tell her, I said, look, Trenton, when she can get up, it's getting dark. I mean, it's getting dark. Okay. I said, you carry the chair. You prop grandma up. I'm going to run to the car and I'm going to get some more water and repellent. And I'll be back and we'll help carry her out. And that's really kind of what I thought. And I know this is a little long-winded, but it gets a little interesting here. But I get to the car. I hump it out. I dump everything in the trunk. I grab 3 bottles of water. I grab a new deal of repellent because the mosquitoes were unbelievable. No sooner do I turn around, I can see for about a quarter mile to where it does a 90-degree turn. I see Michaela. I'm like, oh, I told her to stay with grandma. Well, I run up to her and I say, why didn't you stay with your grandmother? And she goes, oh, she's right behind me. And I look up there and I went, I didn't see anybody. And there's no way. We were a half mile back. Well, about that time, I see Cindy turn the corner. And it was really funny because she's got that cane, right? She's got that cane and she's limping and doing this. And I look at the 2 kids and they're doing this. Anyway, so I ran up to them. I sprayed them with bug repellent. It was millions of mosquitoes, it seemed like. And I was shocked because now you only got a couple hundred yards to the car. You can see the car now. Anyway, so Cindy, we got back to the car. It is now 9 o'clock and it is now getting dark. And she collapsed into the chair and I mean, she's in tears and she looks at me and she said, I made it. Talk about a story of perseverance. I could tell you probably a dozen more just like it with her. And I go back to my dad. She's as stubborn as a bulldog and she will finish the race. I've always said that if we were in an Arctic storm, like back in the Admiral Byrd or whatever, she would be one of the few that would make it. Anyway, let's turn to Revelation chapter 3. And by the way, just for a backstory on that, I meant to leave the gun. I meant to leave the bear repellent with her. Come to find out, the reason that she humped it out of there and they got back faster than I thought, they actually saw a bear. And she said it was amazing how quickly I could start moving. So anyway, Revelation chapter 3, and I'm going to wrap this up pretty fast from here out. But Revelation chapter 3, God says in verse 10, that because you have kept my command to persevere, I also will keep you from the hour of trial, which shall come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. So God has promised us, if we persevere to the end, he will make sure that we are protected. And, you know, that's why we have to build that patience and we have to persevere with the trials that we have in front of us. And I don't think any of us think it's going to get a whole lot better. I think the second wave of COVID is going to be worse than the first. Could be wrong. Don't know. I just know since 2004, we just go from one SARS, MERS, one virus, now COVID. Who knows what the next one is? And when we talk about passion, I just want to briefly state that David was passionate in everything he did, right and wrong. He was a very passionate man. He was passionate on things that were indifferent. I do believe God wants us to be passionate in a very correct manner. Ashley was passionate about writing. I am passionate about anything that's outdoors. I love the mountains. I like to hike, bike, canoe, fish, hunt, you name it. I don't know if it's my native side of me coming out, but you can ask Cindy. I will go and eat outside. I want to build a gazebo so I can sit outside in the rain and the snow. I love it. As long as my body will hold up, I'm hiking and I'm fishing and I'm hunting. And I'd love to get a gravel bike. You should have seen the guys on bikes up at Yellowstone. It was amazing. I would love to do that. But I want to mention Galatians 5 and verse 24, God says, and those who are Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. That's not the passions that I'm talking about. Okay. Colossians 3 verse 5 says, therefore put to death your members which are on earth, and passion is one of those mentioned. So there is a bad side to passion, but I'm talking about the passion that we can have that is good. But we got to remember those passions that we have on this earth are temporary. The passion that you and I should have in a very strong manner is the passion for God's way of life, God's laws, and God's kingdom. And as beautiful as Yellowstone is, and as many times as I like to go there, the kingdom is going to be so much greater, so much more beautiful, so much more productive. I'd like to turn to Colossians chapter 3. When it comes to passion, I'm going to quote Ecclesiastes 9 verse 10. It says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. That's the passion I'm trying to talk about, is something that you do, do it with everything that you have. And then, of course, in the book of Colossians, in chapter 3 and verse 23, he's kind of saying the same thing, just in a little bit different. He says, whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. And that's what I'm trying to say is the passion that we have, we keep it in the right frame of mind. It is a good thing. And of course, passion for God's kingdom is the greatest passion that we can have. So in conclusion, brethren, be patient in life, learn it, use it. That's something that I constantly have to work on, especially when you find me in lines. Persevere through trials that are thrown at us. And we're going to have trials in front of us. God says he chastens those he loves. And so some of the trials that we create, then there's some that God allows us to go through to test us. And brethren, be passionate in all that you do, especially those things that concern God. And I would say this for everybody. I recommend Yellowstone. It is a wondrous place. And I don't think, other than how busy it was, you can find any problem going there. It's just absolutely a wonder. And as I said, you see God's creation not only above the earth, but even below the earth.